In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And forewarning in case either one of us, just so as you're starting to listen to this, forewarning, in case either one of us start to mentally slip away during this episode, both of us have been doing a whole lot of work around our homes. I've been out doing a lot of yard work the last couple of days. Mike has been doing various random things throughout his home for the last couple of days.
And most of it's been both outside.
Oh, so you've been doing the outside thing too.
And, oh, man.
Anybody that knows me, I'm speaking for myself. Mike can say his portion in a moment. But anybody that knows me knows that I am not a yard work person. I typically only do yard work when I have to do yard work. Now, I don't make enough money in my life yet. Notice I say the word yet. Once I finish my schooling and get my certification and get to work with what I'm going to work for, I will be able to afford this, and I will probably jump right into it. But I don't make enough money yet to have yard work paid for. I can't pay a lawn guy. That's too much money for me to spend out each month. I'm too busy paying for all of my streaming services. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Believe me, that takes way priority for me over paying for somebody to do the yard work. I'll do the yard work whenever I either feel like it or I get yelled at to do it. I've historically gotten in trouble because I'm a renter, so I've historically gotten in trouble from landlords because I don't keep up on the yard work properly. This house that we've been living in for many years now, I've been a lot better about it than I have in the past. That doesn't mean I've been good about it. It just means I've been better about it. Instead of going 6 months between lawn mowings, it's like a month and a half. So I've been a lot better at it, believe me.
Oh, the soil out here is absolutely terrible. So I will mow probably what I hate. I hate mowing the lawn. And okay, for the longest time, again, I will back up what you're talking about.
Hold on. I want to add something here.
Go for it.
I don't know if you'll say it, but Mike has more reason to hate mowing the lawn than me. I hate mowing the lawn because I'm a lazy person and don't like to do anything that is manual labor. I just don't like to do it. My body is not conditioned to do it. That's because I never conditioned my body to do that kind of work. When I was a teenager and we moved to a place that had a whole lot of yard and tons of grass everywhere, I was just like, oh my God, why do we have to do this? I mean, I know why now. My dad got a house and didn't have to, he inherited a place, didn't have to pay rent anymore. So you move your family to the place that you own outright. It makes perfect sense. Me as a father now, I would do the exact same thing. But as a teenager, I was just like, there is just so much grass everywhere. And then I remembered that the property had a John Deere riding lawnmower. And so I got to mow the lawn on a riding lawnmower. That was the best time I had mowing a lawn, because I don't know if you've ever driven one of those before, but they're fun, actually. They're a lot of fun to mow the lawn with.
I think I might have used a riding lawnmower like once in my whole life, but I don't even remember the experience. It's been so long. I don't even think I've ever had one. I think I've seen people with one, and I've always just been like, I don't know. It's hilarious because it's always the people, like, I don't know what it is if anybody else sees this, but it's always the people that have a riding lawnmower that are the same type of people that will lecture you about taking care of your lawn. Like,
typically I would say that I typically would agree with you on that point. In this situation, it just so happened that again, my father inherited the property. His mother and his stepfather had the riding lawnmower on the property,
right?
Because his stepfather was so old, he couldn't push a lawnmower anymore. They in fact moved to that specific property, coming further lower elevation from where they had been living. They moved to this property, to that the final property.
Because my
grandfather, because he was the only one I ever knew as my grandfather couldn't operate a snowblower anymore. to clear the path for them to even just walk out to their vehicles, because they lived up at a high enough elevation where they were getting, you know, 3-4 foot of snow sometimes.
Oh, man.
And he couldn't, he was so unhealthy, he had multiple heart attacks, he couldn't operate the snowblower anymore. So they had moved to it, they'd moved down in elevation, still up kind of in the foothills of California, but not up in the hills. And so they had done that for his health. And so when they got this property that was a much smaller property, but it had a lot more grass, because the old property didn't really have any grass anywhere. It was up in the woods. You don't really have grass up in the woods. This one had a lot of grass, had a lot of fruit trees, had a lot of, you know, really nice stuff. And it was well portioned and set up. Having all of that, they went out and bought a riding lawnmower, because that was the only way he could effectively mow all the lawns, because it's a pretty decent amount of lawn that you had to mow. If you were mowing that with a regular mower, that's a couple hours work. With a riding lawnmower, it's like 30 minutes work. So, and again, old right. man, not with having had multiple heart attacks, that old man get, and you know, he can afford it. He's got enough money. He goes out and he buys a riding lawnmower. Admittedly, at his age, he was probably one to criticize people for their lawn not being taken care of. But he was also a guy that would like peel oranges, throw the orange peels at you, and when you tried to throw them back at him, his dog would bark at you and try to attack you, and he'd laugh about it. So he was kind of a crusty old man. He wasn't necessarily the most loving and warm person to be around. My grandmother was, like, but he wasn't. In fact, I don't ever remember being able to give him a hug, because if you get close enough to him, his dog, who was always sitting in his lap, would bark at you and try to bite you.
Oh, what kind of dog did he have? Yeah, he was kind of a...
I don't remember exactly. It was a small one.
Okay, it was a small dog. Okay, all right.
Small, black, and tons of hair.
Okay. So he had a small dog. We're not talking like you throw orange peels at him and his German Shepherd's going to bite your freaking head off.
It was as a kid, it was just big enough to not be puntable. Nowadays, I could punt the thing as far as I needed to. So I wouldn't have, as an adult, I wouldn't worry about it. As a kid, it terrified me still.
Oh, yeah.
I'm also afraid of dogs. Anyway, the point I was getting to way back in the beginning of it was that Mike has less reason to like doing yard work than me, not because he's lazy like me, although he may be. I won't speak to that. But because Mike has severe allergies to grasses and pollens and such like. So for me, it's just I'm lazy and I don't want to do shit. For Mike, it's basically his nose and face is attacked by all of the plants that he is killing in the process of cleaning things up. So I'm more than glad to admit that my reasons are reasons of laziness for not liking it. Your reasons are definitely make more sense. And if I had problems to that level, I mean, I have seasonal allergies, but not, I don't have allergies near to the level that you have.
You've seen my face. I look like a fucking zombie. When spring really kicks in, people visibly understand, like they get a visual representation of how I feel by my face. It is not something I can hide. I sound and look like shit when it really kicks in hard. And you're right. When it comes down to just doing yard work in general, dude, you're kicking up all the dust and all the stuff, the grass and everything. It gets in my face. I will tell you this. It has become much more tolerable because now I can throw on the face mask that I'm used to throwing on all the time. And that does a hell of a job. It makes me wonder why I never did it before.
You know what you should do?
What?
Because you didn't think about it in that world. You know what you should also do? You should go to like you probably get them at Walmart, but you'd also get them at like hardware stores and stuff. Mm-hmm. Get like the safety goggles, like the full on goggles, not glasses,
right?
But the full on goggle.
Yeah.
Wear your mask and wear your freaking goggles. It'll help keep it out of your eyes.
Yeah.
And it'll help. I mean, you're going to look a little funny, but you know, just be like, just if you're mowing the front yard, if there is some lawn still in the front yard, last time I was there, there wasn't much. But if there is some lawn there and you're mowing it and people look at you funny, just be like, you know, corona precautions. Don't want that COVID.
I could just go like, it reminds me of this. What you're telling me reminds me of another alternative. I could just like go full Trailer Park Boys Bubbles and like create a hazmat suit out of garbage bags with the face mask and the whole thing, and just make it look like I'm this Trailer Park beekeeper while I'm mowing the lawn, you know, and that's the only thing I'm doing.
There's been times when I first moved into places where I wanted to go out and mow the lawn and something like wear like with the full beard, mind you, not changing the full beard,
okay,
but put on like a wig and put on a dress and like pantyhose and stuff and mow the yard and just wave to all the neighbors just so that they think that like, okay, the people in that house are a little different and a little off. Because to me, that would just be like, all right, dude, that's how dude likes to mow his lawn. But to most people, especially, again, we're living in a fairly conservative area of California.
Maybe most people would just be like,
what the hell is going on?
You sure as hell never get any Jehovah's Witnesses at your doorstep, I'm quite sure.
No, I still get them, but part of the reason is because I'm really polite to them when they come to the doorstep.
Oh, okay.
I've had too many friends in my life that were Jehovah's Witnesses. And I mean, I get the compulsion of why they're doing what they're doing. And so, you know, I'm just like, nope, not interested. You guys have a good day. And I'm just, I don't know. I find it better to be polite to them than to be rude to them. I'm more rude to the people trying to, I'm more rude to little kids in the neighborhood that are trying to sell candy bars and crap to me. Cause one, I don't need to buy candy bars. Look at me. I probably already have, you know, previous to my dieting, I most likely already have candy in the house. So what do you, I mean, that's literally like, it's like the crack dealer going to the crackhead's house to sell the stuff. Normally they make the crackhead come to them. No, this is the crack dealer going, like, I'm waiting for the Girl Scouts to come into the door. I better hit that door first because I'm the only person in this house that has enough resistance to stop the Girl Scouts from selling me their crack cookies. I'm telling you, there are drugs in the cookies. That's a movie reference, by the way.
Oh, well, that would make sense because we just got Girl Scout cookies from one of our friends' daughters was selling them, and they're fantastic still. Love the hell out of Girl Scout cookies.
I love it when people hit me up for that crap. They're like, you know, our family friend will contact me and be like, hey, our kids are selling candy bars, or our girls are selling, you know, the Girl Scout cookies, or like, then they try to make it even more personal. It's like, hey, your niece is selling these things.
Your niece. And yeah. It's like, they're directly tied to you.
And it's like, no, sis, I am not buying that crap. I'm not going to do it. When have I ever called you up and asked you to buy stuff for my kids when they're selling stuff? If my kids are selling stuff like that, I deal with it like any other proper red-blooded American is going to deal with it. I buy all the shit myself so that my kids look like they have elevated numbers and they've done a great job selling. That's how you take care of that.
And you know what? The school doesn't give a shit either. You know, not they really don't. No. They absolutely don't. So yeah, it's always the rich kids that end up getting the cool prizes at the end of the whole drive, man.
I do want to say that I once or twice tried to do that kind of stuff when I was a kid, and I was greeted with the look from my mom like, no, you're not calling people to sell crap. We are not selling those things. You take that crap back to school.
Oh wow,
that never happened. Never happened. Man. My mother
not even like the book drive stuff.
No.
Oh man, no. I did the book drive stuff.
I didn't have to worry about that because that was one of the few things that my mother would always buy for me. She would always buy me books. If I was interested in a book, she would always buy books.
Oh,
she,
nice.
She didn't buy toys regularly. You had to wait for your birthday or Christmas for toys, mm-hmm. which was nice for me because my birthday's in the summertime, you know, when you remember it, you know. And and so I get, every 6 months I would have a day where I would get stuff. So I could look forward to every 6 months that was happening. I feel sorry for, like, I have one sister who was born very, very close to Christmas. And so, yeah, it sucks for her because it's like there's Christmas and then not long after there's her birthday. And so it all happens kind of in the same, you know, pattern. I mean, I got one kid who's, again, right before Christmas. So, like, you got to figure out what stuff's going to go for birthday and what stuff's going to go for Christmas. And can we get stuff for birthday that leads into the stuff for Christmas? Ooh. And see, like, maybe we'll get one small toy of this thing for birthday. And if he likes this thing, we don't have to return the like six other things that we got for Christmas. Cause we bought it all at once. Cause we're not stupid. We're not going to not buy it all at once and miss out on it. You know, go back to the store and find they're all sold out. I'm not dumb like that. I'd rather buy it and return it if I don't use it. But, like, you know, you throw in the one toy, the, you know, whatever it is. And it's just like, you know, just like a single character from that line of toys. And, like, does the kid play with that? Is the kid excited when they open that for the present? And, oh, they are excited. Cool. Then, like, the vehicle and the fortress and, like, the three other characters you got, that's Christmas. because you already know they already like that one. They're going to be really excited on Christmas morning when poof, they have all the pieces to go with that one. That's going to work out perfect. Believe me, I've done that for more years than I want to count. But anyway, wow, this is a whole long conversation about how we're tired, and I don't see us being tired in any way, shape, or form.
You seem to have a lot of wind for someone who's tired, sir.
Well, I've also had to be focusing not only on the yard work and the housework. I know that you have more than just the yard work, because you've been doing the new job thing still.
Yes.
You're still getting beat up over that. I've been working on some of my finishing up of my schooling. That we've only touched a little bit on my schooling, because I don't want to talk about it too much. It is a personal journey.
Understood.
But this specific thing that I'm doing right now, I'm doing a class that is business communication. Mm-hmm. And I've actually thought about you a couple of times while doing this class.
Oh, really?
And the reason I've thought about you is because, you know, 20 years ago, yes, it's been that long. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, we were working in a business together.
Yes.
I mean, technically, we didn't. It's like I don't want it to sound like we owned the business. We worked for a company, and it was at the same location. We worked together. And as I'm going through these chapters on business communication, I'm flabbergasted. I understand that the idea is to teach somebody who's never really had a job, or maybe never had any kind of management experience in a job, how to work in a business environment. But I'm reading through it, and I'm like, these are things that I learned while I was being an assistant manager at Blockbuster all these years ago. I learned this stuff while doing it. I learned it kind of on the job. I saw it happen. Are people not learning these things on the job anymore? And, you know, things about if you have an employee, right? Uh-huh. A subordinate who is not doing their job properly, or they're constantly showing up late, or, you know, something where you have to have a discussion with them. It details how to have the discussion with them and gives you scenarios. Do you walk right up to their cubicle? Of course, it's always an office setting, which is annoying, but still, whatever. You can adapt. If you're smart, you can adapt that to any setting. Mm-hmm. So like back in the day at Blockbuster, right? Let's say you were arriving late on a regular basis, which... First I'll go through what the normal conversation would be. Then I'll go through what our personal conversation would be.
Okay.
But like, let's say you're arriving late on a regular basis. How should I approach you? Should I walk right up to the register while another associate is working, checking in movies, and talk to you about your being late right then and there? Or should I ask you to come into the back room to have a discussion and talk to you in the back room?
I don't understand anybody who would actually have a discussion like that directly on the floor, because that's extremely unprofessional. But
and yet that's the example they give as what might happen. And should you do this? And it's like, duh, you shouldn't. Are people that dumb? If apparently they are, that's the scary thing. Is
wow.
They need to tell you, if they need to tell you that this is the wrong way to handle things, it's like one of those things of like. If they need to tell you not to inhale water because you might drown, something has been wrong in your life. Somebody has not taught you the proper things throughout your entire life. What's wrong with it? To me, that just seems like a logical thing that if you have to have a discussion with an employee, you do it on a personal basis. You don't do it in front of everybody on the floor. And, you know, conversation, and then how you approach the conversation. Do you go straight out into accusing them of being late and getting mad at them? Or do you try to find out if there's... You're trying to talk to them in a nice way, try to find out if there's an issue, if there's something that you can help them with, you know, get them at ease before you talk to them about it, because the better way to, you know, to get to your employee is to sometimes have them at ease and, you know, be able to have a discussion. Or again, do you just start yelling and screaming at them about being late and how they're going to lose their job and all that? Well, I think part of that has to do with the, you know, whether that's the only problem the employee has. But like, to me, again, proper management should be that you talk to them. But again, I have to say, I've had managers that have just yelled at me for absolutely no reason whatsoever, because they're just kind of asshole people. And I think that's part of what it takes into effect, is there are the dumb people in the world who are assholes to each other. And so you have to teach them not to be assholes to each other, which, again, what kind of raising did you have? But whatever. And then, of course, I wanted to add, if it was yours and my actual conversation, if I was pulling you aside, asking about it, I would be like, dude. And we're going to role play this, okay? So you got to play your part. Can you play your part? So it's like,
sure.
We'd go in the back room and here's how it would start. Dude.
Yeah.
You've been late. Like multiple times. What's going on? I know where you live, dude. You live at my house. What the hell is going on? I schedule you to work at these times. I write the damn schedule, dude. What's going on? I woke you up before I left. I left 3 hours before you. What the hell? I know you don't speak that
these
long
are
in the
these
shower.
Are the conversations that we used to have at times. But it's a whole different type of rapport that we have with each other, though. Like, you wouldn't necessarily do that with another employee.
Well, no, because no other
pretty
employee
much like
was
the only employee that you would do that with.
No other employee was living in my apartment.
This is true, which is already technically speaking a conflict of interest when you really think about it. Technically speaking, yeah, that's a conflict, especially being that you were my superior. That was not a good thing. But again, that's not part of the conversation. We're out of the bit at this point. But
let's add to the fact that I was also the one that wrote the schedule, and I wrote you on the schedule as my closer every night I possibly could.
Yes.
So that you and I were constantly working together.
Yeah.
So and then let's also add that the nights that you were that I was there working and the nights that you were there closing, my wife, who was not an employee, was also in the store sitting outside of camera range and occasionally helping customers and eating the pizza that we would order and place on the counter and eat right in front of customers. So that was a whole.
Yeah, that
I'm not saying that I didn't have things that were unprofessional. I just knew how to gauge and guide the unprofessional things. After a certain time at night, only certain regular customers came in, especially on Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah.
You only had certain customers that would be coming in. And so during that time period, those customers kind of got used to. They'd show up on Friday and, you know, the pizza was already there and they kind of knew it. You know, mm-hmm. one of our regular customers was a guy that we knew that, at least that I knew, that worked at another pizza place that would occasionally bring us pizzas that people had ordered and not paid for or ordered yep. wrong. Something would happen. He'd just call me up, be like, hey, dude, I got a pizza that's wrong. You want it? Yeah, sure. Bring it by. No problem. You hook me up? Yeah, I'll get you a free rental. No problem. Yes, I would do that. The company's gone, so I can admit to some of that now. And I had discretion as a manager to give out free rentals occasionally. But yeah, you know, I mean, so there was some unprofessional things, but still going over this has just been fun. And for me, it's been particularly interesting because it's like I've had jobs. I've been at at most ends of the scale, not every, and I've never been the full store manager, but just a regular working associate at a place. I've been an assistant manager. I've been what they called for a while at Blockbuster, a shift leader, which is basically an assistant manager that's not paid like an assistant manager, is not given the hours of an assistant manager, and is not given the authority of an assistant manager, but has to have all the responsibilities of an assistant manager.
Right.
Is that a good way to describe it?
That's essentially it. And that's that's just basically skirting laws. The reason why that position was made was literally a skirt to law because management positions, specifically with the word manager in them, had requirements in a state law and some federal law. They had some federal guidelines or state guidelines, especially honestly,
yeah,
like most of it came from like California. Like California is such a large economy in the country that some of the terminology that they create or the workers' rights that they lobby behind all the time ends up becoming something that affects things on a national scale because a bunch of other states end up following suit, or there's so much of the employee base that lives in California and so much business is done in California that it's basically a bad idea to try to fight California in the state of with the, labor with laws.
With the exception of like minimum wage, which that's a whole
well,
other
yeah,
thing. We won't get into that.
Boy,
can of
yeah,
worms
let's
today.
Let's not get into that can of worms for sure. But it was one of those things that the reason why you were given that position was because the company was too stingy to pay you what you deserved in a management position. They couldn't call you a manager, but they could give you keys. They could make you close the store. They could do all of these things, but they didn't want to pay you full time. They didn't want to give you benefits. They didn't want to offer you insurance. They didn't want to give you whatever, the depending upon the company. You know, some places are like stock options or XYZ, like whatever that is. They literally did it because they didn't want to pay you, and that's all, which is crazy. Like it's not... It's crazy, but it's too common to be comfortable, period. But look, dude, you were a manager. You were a manager in that store. You just weren't paid
at one point,
And
no, I get what you're saying, It was a sucky position. Way of doing things, but yeah, Blockbuster, I got all of those roles. When I worked at the Orange Apron place, Home Depot, I was various places within the store, but I never got into the management because I admittedly my time with management at Blockbuster, I loved working with some of the associates that I worked with, some of the people I worked with there, actually a good number of them, and I liked being able to kind of run the shift that I was on and kind of have things work and flow the way that I liked to have them work and flow.
Yeah,
it was really nice. I felt there was a good relationship, and I got to be the type of manager, at least I felt I was the type of manager that I always wanted to have as a manager. A manager that would listen, a manager that would understand, and a manager that was willing to work with the associates as opposed to make the associates work for them. And when I left because politics happened at our store. And I wasn't going to be involved in the politics that were happening. So when all the things went down, I just basically walked in, turned in my shirt and keys and said I was done because I wasn't going to be a part of, you know, the various things that happened. I found myself in Home Depot, and at first it was a really welcoming environment, and it looked like something I would want to work my way up to be a department head. And then as I spent more time there, I realized that when I spent more time there, the Home Depot kind of changed its corporate policies and its corporate way of handling things. Previous to me being there, and for the first year that I was there, the original owners and guys who started it, Bernie and Arthur, they ran the place in such a way that they were very much more concerned with making sure customers had a good experience there. They got the things they needed, and they had experienced people working. And right around the time I got there, they hired a former Viacom CEO to run it, and they were just going to sit back and basically collect the money at that point. And then Arthur Blank went and bought like the Atlanta Falcons with all of his money that he has, and kind of runs the Atlanta Falcons in a similar way to what the CEO started running Home Depot. And they started because they brought in a CEO to start running things. Previous to that, they didn't have a real CEO business guy running things. They just were running it themselves. He started instituting all these standard business practices of, you know, reduce the labor force to the bare minimum that's necessary to keep the store at least functioning, and freeze raises, freeze hiring stuff, don't promote from within, but hire outside people that have degrees and business experience supposedly, but have no actual experience in the things that Home Depot was involved in actually doing. When you had a guy that was running your flooring department that had spent 15 years in flooring previous to that, and he was getting paid well enough that it was worth him working a 40-hour a week job at a store, and the workload and demand wasn't such that it was like, you know, okay, this is kind of a semi-retirement for me, and I know everything about every type of flooring. That was great, because that guy could answer any question. He would help you with anything. And then you start getting these people that were not necessarily that experienced, but had some knowledge, and they, more importantly, they had had a bunch of business experience. They had taken a class like this business communications class that supposedly taught them how to effectively communicate and stuff, which is great, except it's a textbook version of it. It's not the real life version of it. And yeah, I saw that, and I became disillusioned with wanting to rise up in the ranks any further.
I understand that.
And then I stopped working for a while, at least out in public. I started working at home. But anyway, So yeah, all these lessons that I had learned from all these years, I'm reading the stuff in this business communications class. And mm-hmm. two of the things, you know, there's homework, there's projects, there's things like that. Two of the projects kind of stood out to me. One of them was one of the first projects in the class they wanted me to write a 500-word essay on any topic. This is supposed to show my ability to write an essay and to communicate my feeling on a topic appropriately. And I was first thing that hit me was, what am I going to say in 500 words? Because they've given me a word limit. I'm not supposed to go over 500 words. What the hell am I going to? That's like one page.
Yeah.
What am gonna I say, going to words talk is about?
Not that much.
I can't think space. Of anything that I would talk about in 500 words or less. That's just right. Like, what are you doing? That's like giving like three pieces of paper to William Shakespeare and here, write a play.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like,
I'm like, actually, man, it's more like, you have it's more a like lot more words than 500 on any topic that you throw, that anybody throws at you.
It's well, another better example, give William Shakespeare 100 words and have him write a play with 100 words. He'd be like, bitch, I'm making up my own words, which he did. Interestingly enough,
could you imagine what Bill Shakespeare could have done with a Twitter account?
Oh God, that's scary. I don't know if 144 characters is enough.
Oh man.
Actually, what to think about is what Dr. Seuss would have done with a Twitter account, seeing as the Cat in the Hat was a challenge to use, I believe, less than 100 words in a book.
Wow.
Now,
really,
he uses many of the words over again, but he's basically given a list of 100 words and like, these are the only words you can use in this book. And he was like, okay, I'll do it. I could do that.
Whoa.
But
was that like a college project or something for him?
No, this was, it was something that he did later as a writer. He didn't start writing the children's stuff till after his ad stuff wasn't making enough money and his pornographic, drawings weren't making enough money.
I forgot but about all that.
Dr. Seuss is a discussion for another day.
That's a dark one
because I get very mad when they do the whole celebrating Dr. Seuss Day and whatnot. And I'm like, that's because they do it at schools. And I'm like, do you really know what that person was like?
Well, did he do political cartoons and stuff like that too?
Yeah. He also started sleeping with another woman openly whilst married to his wife who was dying of cancer for years.
Good Lord. Okay. Yeah. Let's not divulge too much because that's a wonderful preview. Let's leave it at that.
That's a dark one to come back
yeah,
to.
Yeah, dude.
Year,
let's
every year when the schools do that, I'm like, seriously.
If I may pitch here, I know that we're recording, but if I may pitch a doubleheader with him and Shel Silverstein.
Okay.
Or maybe two entire separate episodes. We have no idea. Who knows? What will happen?
We'll have to see how it goes. Yeah, both of those will be fun.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, 500 words is not enough for me to say anything. Not really enough at all. I talk forever. This anybody who listens to this podcast, the like five of you, I want to say I appreciate the five of you, but you know I can't say things in under 500 words, and so the only topic I could think of to write about is how hampered I feel by only being able to use 500 words, and that's what I wrote about.
Okay.
I wrote about the fact that I felt like I was completely restrained. I couldn't talk about any topic. I could talk about, you know, I could talk about the wonderful food chemist who created, you know, Pop Rocks and I forget the other things now. It's in the paper I wrote. Or I could talk about how spam helped win World War II. Or I'm listing off all these things that I've done research on recently, right?
Yeah.
And so like I can write about these things, but it's not going to be in 500 words or less, really. And so the whole thing is like, I could write about all this stuff, but I'm hampered. You've shackled me to only having 500 words. So what I'm going to write about is the fact that I don't feel like I can write about anything in less than 500 words. And I did it in exactly 500 words, changed a few words around, used two or three words somewhere where I had only used one to make sure I had exactly 500 words.
That's great.
In the body of the text.
Of course. But
I was just like, see what you think about this, lady, to the teacher. Because I was like, I don't like this assignment. Other people would be like, how am I going to come up with 500 words? Like, listen, when I used to be told back in high school, Yeah, when I used to be told back in high school that you have a that there's a like the teacher would be saying, "Hey, okay, we're going to do a 5-page essay on this." The teacher would look directly at me and say, "You need to keep it under 7 pages. Everybody else, 5 pages." And I would struggle to keep it under 7 pages because I like to explain. I like to.
I don't
use words.
Have time to read, James. I'm doing a bunch.
Make the damn time.
I'm grading a bunch of 5-page essays. Some of them will be three.
Actually, funny enough, I had the same English teacher through all 4 years of high school because I went to a very small school.
Yeah.
There were two other people in the English class with me that when our English teacher would say a 5-page paper, from one of them he would expect a 3-page paper every time. That's all that student would ever be able to put forward.
Right.
And that guy's one of my best friends in high school. Not my best friend in high school, but one of them. And that he's a very smart guy, very, very smart guy. When it came to like sitting down and writing a paper, not his strong suit at all. So getting 3 pages out of him was like, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
That was a good thing to get 3 pages, especially if it was a cohesive 3 pages. That was good enough for like a B for him. He wasn't going to get the A necessarily, but he was going to get a solid B for getting the 3 pages.
That's decent.
And then we have also in the same classes for 4 years, my best friend through high school. And I'm outing him a little bit on this. Sorry, Rob. I'm outing you, Rob, our website guy, our tech website guy.
Okay.
I went to high school with him, 4 years of high school together. The English teacher knew that if he assigned a 5-page paper, he would be lucky to get a single page out of Rob. And Rob will admit to this wholeheartedly. He's like, yeah, I hate English.
Rob is a man of few words, actually. I've had a couple of conversations with him. He's to the point, though. Like, he's not going to waste your fucking time either.
Oh, he's very much to the point. And again,
yeah.
A very, very smart individual. He just hated writing papers in English. Absolutely hated writing papers. I would go to his house to write my papers in English because I didn't have a computer. And he did because, again, computers, tech, all that stuff were so huge to him.
Right.
Still are. And he'd be watching me type out this, and I don't write rough drafts. I just write a paper and then go back and edit it and I'm done. he'd be watching me in an hour and a half marathon session, typing out this, this 7-page paper and moving paragraphs around and stuff. Cause they didn't fit with the flow. So I move one here and move mm-hmm. that. He's watching me do this. He's like, dude, I don't know how your brain works. And it's like, yeah, I don't either. It just does. Let's just go. And he'd go do other things as I was occupying his computer, wait for me to get off his computer so he could get back on it. And it was just, he'd do one page. But that's what our English teacher had learned what to expect from us and how we handled things. So, yeah, it was just, but anyway. This week I got to do something fun though with this business communication class that I have never done before in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I got to build and do a PowerPoint presentation because I exist in the world that I've never used PowerPoint presentation. I've never had to.
Okay.
Never had a job where it's been necessary. Those things weren't taught when I was in school because how old I am. So I've never had to do one. I've sat through a bunch of them. Here's the thing. And you know what's coming. I fucking hate PowerPoint presentations. I hate them so much. I would rather see somebody that's a good speaker give an hour and a half long lecture. As long as it's a good lecture, I would so much rather that. PowerPoint presentations, the people are always like super happy and like they've been taking like happy pill drugs and they're sometimes they got the little laser pointer thing, but if they don't, they got some little button thing that they can push to advance to the next slide. And they're all cheerful talking about this thing. And sometimes they try to be funny. Sometimes they try to be serious. It doesn't matter because it's just the slide is one of the lines that they say. And then some kind of a picture that they think corresponds. And it's
always,
like, okay, I get
always.
It. But like, it tunes me out. I check out immediately. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where like, I see the PowerPoint presentation start and I'm just like, I don't care what you're trying to tell me. I feel like you're force feeding it to me. Now, as I've gotten older, I've come to understand that some people really enjoy PowerPoint presentations. Other people, that's a really great way for them to learn because they learn from listening, but they also learn from visual stuff. They need that visual to be able to help cement the ideas in their head. When I was younger, I didn't understand that. And sometimes when I haven't had enough to eat or I'm just in a bad mood, I still don't want to understand that. I just want to be frustrated. But I am being asked to do a PowerPoint presentation. And yet again, I am being shackled because it has to be a short PowerPoint presentation, 4 to 5 slides. And I'm like, so what the hell you want me to say in 4 to 5 slides? You wanted me to do a PowerPoint presentation? I'm going to give you like 50 slides and we're going to have a story. I'm going to tell you like how all of the Marvel movies intertwine with each other, and I will get pictures from all of them. I will tell you about how all the Star Wars movies intertwine with one another and all the history behind it. By the way, both topics that we have done on podcasts.
Yes.
And so the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, I wrote that 500-word essay on how I didn't want to write the 500-word essay. What if I do a PowerPoint presentation on how much I hate PowerPoint presentations? That's so me.
Oh, and then just do like the meta shit where you're talking about, don't you hate all these PowerPoint slides where somebody ironically uses a meme completely out of context that just makes sure that they're completely out of touch with reality or out of touch with memetics in general, and then just put up something that literally looks like that as an example?
Yeah.
So it is a PowerPoint about how PowerPoint sucks.
Don't they make you sleepy and then have like picture of somebody sleeping on a desk or something? Yeah. Right. This is what, that was my original intention and plan.
Oh, were they not going to allow you to, you had to say what it was, huh?
No. You turned it in blind. That was my original intention and plan. I was going to do it. But then I had the other problem. I've never done a PowerPoint presentation. I had no idea what even the hell to do. So I open up PowerPoint and I'm like, okay, well, I see a slide. What am I supposed to do? And you know what? You know what? We're going to take a break right now.
Oh,
and when we come back, I will detail the rest of what this PowerPoint presentation ended up being. I'm going to let people be hanging at what was James thinking when he was looking at the PowerPoint program and the first slide. Where was his brain? So we'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we're back.
All right.
So, should I set the scene more? Should I describe like where I was in the house? I was in the living room, sitting on the couch. CSI was playing in the background because this is my wife gave up on Smallville because she realized that literally every episode it was a bunch of kryptonite enhanced super freaks doing crazy stuff, and this version of Clark Kent is really stupid and can't figure it out until like the end of the episode. And somehow or another, somebody, usually somebody that knows him or whatever, uses kryptonite on him at some point. Or he walks
Superman
into a freaking
room. Superman
was
never known to be a detective. He just kind of busts his way through shit.
But he's not stupid. Clark Kent Clark Kent in Smallville is stupid. He is a special brand of stupid. Again,
you should have done your PowerPoint presentation on Smallville and all the ridiculous shit.
Who says I didn't?
Oh my God, you are. All right, that's it. I am now invested. Let's go.
I haven't revealed the topic yet.
Okay.
But anyway, my wife got tired of watching Smallville. She got done with it. And so, which is probably the reason why I've never been able to finish that series. Cause I think when it gets to a certain point, my wife's like, this is just, even for her, when she watches things that literally are the same thing every episode, even for her, it's like, this is just too dumb. I can't do this anymore. And you know, I can't fault her for it.
Understood. So, understood.
CSI is on in the background. I'm not a fan of CSI, especially because I think they handle everything just so incorrectly and so wrong. And again, the people are stupid. It's obvious to me from the beginning of the episode exactly what happened. But they have to go through their whole testing DNA for this and checking this out. And, oh, wait, notice this. Wonder what this is. Maybe we'll find out. It's like, I already know what the hell that is. And then CSI investigators never confront suspects and talk to them. Just doesn't happen. That's what police do. The CSI people tell the police stuff, and then the police, you know, talk to the suspects. The CSI are never in the room doing the interrogations. But you can't have that happen in a TV series because it's not fun.
Right.
So anyway, I'm not paying attention to the TV, luckily.
Okay.
In the living room. Should I describe what I was wearing?
You don't have to.
I was wearing. Okay. So I'm sitting here with this PowerPoint program up in front of me and the first slide available. And I'm hoping people can get kind of the mentality that I was having here. Cause again, I've seen PowerPoint presentations. To me, they've, as much as I've hated them, they've always seemed like some kind of magic thing, like calligraphy and scrapbooking. You know what I mean? One of those things that like people just know how to do it in a way that is effective. Like my wife has tried to get me into scrapbooking at different points of time. Like, so what, you just like take a picture and put it on the page? That's like a photo album. No, but you like put a border around it and you put all these decorations. I'm like, how? It's kind of the same thing with art with me. It's like, how do you know which decorations to put around it? How do you know how many decorations to put around it? Do you just cover the page in different things, or do you just do it sparsely? It's like putting, it's always hard for me, like put stickers on a binder, you know, or draw on a binder. Mm-hmm. Or if you did if you covered your textbooks in like a brown paper bag, cause your family was too poor to afford like the real book covers that they wanted you to get. Cause you always had to cover your books because the government could buy the books for the school one time, but you had to cover them at home to make sure that, you know, the covers didn't get damaged, which was dumb. Teachers even tried to make that a homework assignment.
Yeah.
Sidebar.
They did.
Sidebar. I had a teacher. I had a history teacher back in middle school that made it a homework assignment for us to cover our books. I didn't cover my book. He told me I didn't get the homework assignment, so I had to write sentences about not finishing a homework assignment. But since I didn't feel that technically was homework, that was an activity, not homework, I refused to do the sentences, and I got detention for it.
Oh, wow.
That was back in like seventh or eighth grade. Yeah, I was always a person that was kind of nitpicky about rules and a bit of a
rule. Well, I mean, they were just basically just picking on you at that point. Like,
I was a mouthy little kid.
Oh, okay. You were being a little shit. Okay.
Yeah, I was a mouthy little kid. I was like, but I'm sorry. What it was is there was nothing in the sentence that had you had to write these sentences, which is an easy thing. Like, you just write the sentences like 15 times. It's one sentence. You write it 15 times. You're done. And I was like, well, the sentence says nothing about covering your books, so I don't feel that the punishment fits the crime. Well, then you're going to get detention. I don't feel that punishment fits the crime either. Well, you still have to do detention. What the hell? So that was kind of my response to it. I've always been one that like I don't buck authority in like a huge way. I do it in like little tiny annoying ways where I think the authority is stupid and not being appropriate. Again, why I wrote the essay that I wrote.
I will in your defense, I will say that at least you are questioning not the authority for the fact that it's an authority, but you're questioning the authority for their reasoning. That's what you should be doing anyway. It's what you should do now. Anybody who has a problem with any type of authority on that ground, if it logically or morally doesn't make any sense to do so, fucking question it. That's the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I tried it with my mom, and a couple of times it actually worked in my favor.
Wow.
Because when she would want to do certain punishments, I'd be like, that doesn't logically fit. That doesn't fit to what I did. And, you know,
thereby sometimes acknowledging that you did something wrong.
Which I learned at an early age, it was better to acknowledge that I did something wrong when I actually did something wrong. Not necessarily, let me rephrase. I learned it was good. It was better to acknowledge what happened. Now, whether it was wrong or not, it could possibly be open for interpretation.
Okay.
But I found that it was easier to acknowledge that I did whatever happened if I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Because being truthful about that helped you to be able to work through whatever punishments were happening. At least I found from my experience, it was better for me to be truthful up front. If I was accused of, did you hit your sister? Yeah, I hit my sister. I wasn't going to say, no, I didn't hit my sister, because if I did. Now, if I didn't hit my sister, I would say, no, I didn't hit my sister. And that actually, what ended up happening was, if my sister accused me of hitting her, if I didn't hit her and I said, no, I didn't, I would be believed. Because
right,
every time
because
that
you
I did
admitted
hit her,
to when you did it beforehand, so yeah, there's no reason for them not to believe you.
Exactly. And yeah. I the thing is, I didn't abuse that. I stayed consistent with that. So if I did something, I would admit that I did the action. Again, the right or wrong of it can possibly be open to debate. But the doing the action itself, I'd rather admit to doing the action. And then at least at that point, we've started off with, I'm admitting that I did the thing that I'm being accused of. You know, or I'm saying I didn't do it. Either way, I'm being truthful. I'm being truthful. Now yeah. We can take whatever step comes from there. I found it always easier to be truthful about it, because when you lie about it and then you get caught in the lie later, it just compounds things even worse. Just be truthful about it up front. You have a better chance of getting a better result. And so there were times when I would say, you know, this punishment doesn't fit this crime, and it worked in my favor. There were times that the punishment became something worse because I said it didn't fit the crime. And so, oh, okay, let's do this then instead. That fits the crime. Yeah, but I don't like that one as much. Let's go back to the other one. Nope. This is the one we're doing. See what happens when you try to be smart with me? Yeah, it sometimes bites me in the ass, but at least it was an appropriate punishment for whatever was done.
Right.
But anyway, like I said, I'm looking at this thing. And again, I am somewhat computer illiterate, right? We can agree that I'm somewhat computer illiterate. Like, I'm surprised that I've been able to, as quickly as I have been, pick up on our new thing that we go through to do this podcast, the new program that we're using.
Yes.
I'm luckily there's only like one or two things I have to click, so it's really hard to get it wrong. But still, yeah. I'm so proud of myself that I'm like already set up and good to go when you log on, and I've already got it brought up, the program brought up, I'm logged on properly, all my stuff is plugged in properly, everything's working good, I haven't screwed it up.
A lot of people don't give themselves enough credit for that kind of stuff, and you don't do that either. Like, that means a lot for you to be able to learn something that's so outside of your wheelhouse on a reliable level. Is, I'll be real, that means a lot. That actually means quite a bit, especially to me, as somebody who's doing the work after this is done. You know, it makes me not have to worry about it.
And it's, I can recognize the accomplishment most of the time, but there are other times where I'm just like, I am so shocked that I actually did that thing right. Because it's one of those things that, like, I didn't grow up with the technology. It always frightens me. And then again, I have I will reference again, my friend Rob, our website guy. He still to this day believes that I killed one of his computers. I do not believe that I killed one of his computers. I believe he had his stuff jury-rigged so much that something happened and it overloaded it. But as far as he's concerned, I touched the computer and it died forever.
I do not know this story, but I do want to know it at some point. Maybe not right now, but later on.
That's basically the end of the story. I touched the computer, it died, and it never came back on.
Like, and did so you that's, use and that's, it, or did you just, like, put your finger on the monitor and exploded? Like, what happened then?
Yeah, okay, maybe there needs to be more to the story. And moreover, I want you to hear his side of it, because maybe he can tell you some of the technical aspect of it that I don't understand. I still maintain I didn't break the computer, but him and I will both go to our respective graves with our versions of the story. He will never ever believe that there was nothing else but me killing that computer, and a small part of me worries that I did.
I am quite, like, I really want to bring in his side of the story to this, because I want to see where he is so adamant about, like, because here's the deal, like, the way he knows
he's
tech,
still terrified.
He may very well be right. Like,
He's still terrified. He's still terrified to this day of me touching computers. And whenever I contact him about a computer problem, the first thing he does every time, well, did you touch it? Well, of course I touched it. I had to touch it to make it do, you know, at least the minimum stuff. That's what's wrong. You touched it. No, that's not what's wrong. Tell me what's wrong. Are you sure you can handle fixing it, or are you going to break it? Seriously, dude, help me.
I can see this story happening. I could definitely see this happening between
especially he can get the sardonic voice going really, really good with this, because he knows exactly which button to push with it. We've been friends for way too damn long. I know it's out of love and him just giving me, you know,
right.
You know, a bad time and whatnot, but still there's that little part of me that's like, it may have been me, I may have killed the computer, I may be a curse and a cancer to computers. You know, and so I get terrified sometimes when I touch computers. When I started going to college and they said, okay, so here's the computer area, and you log on the computers and you do the stuff on there, I was like, you want me to log on a computer? Is that safe? Is it safe for me to be getting on the computers? Is that a good thing? And I came home that night and I was like, guess what? And my wife's like, what? I got on the computer at school. Yeah. I logged in and I did my stuff. Yeah. I didn't break it. You didn't break it? Because she knows the joke too.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Known, she's known Rob for 20 some odd years. So it's, she knows what the joke is about me and computers. And it's like, really? We even have we used to have computers that I wasn't allowed to touch because I'm considered a bad person with computers. Interestingly enough, I have all the computers in the house now, which is scary. Because I'm starting to get to comfortable with them. And this last year and a half, I had to do a Microsoft class. So I did Word again, and I was surprised with all the new things they have in Word, you know, from 20 years ago, because Word sucked back 20 years ago. It was really hard to work with. So all the things that you had to maneuver by placing the cursor in certain areas and tabbing over certain areas and weird formatting stuff, they Hot like make keys, it so man. Easy now.
Hotkeys.
Huh?
Hotkeys. Hotkeys are the bane of my existence in some areas, but in others, they're like so, they make things so easy. But you have to be really used to using them before you can use them, you know.
Well, I was just looking at the formatting stuff and the stuff that you can do with formatting nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wait, I can set it up to where like this line formats this far indented and the next, like, and then the next line goes indented further and then it does it for multiple lines. And I can just set that up as basic formatting and I don't have to do it by hand. Mm-hmm. Holy crap.
Yep.
Because 20 years ago, you couldn't get that set up. The program was not smart enough to do that.
No.
Like this, and I'm going through the book and it's having me do these things. Okay, so I push this and then I click here and I do that and I click. Holy crap, it does that by itself. I don't have to sit and spend hours making sure everything lines up perfectly.
Yep.
I can set these little things up at the ruler. I can set at different points and they'll do stuff. That is so cool. Why didn't it used to do this? And that was fun. And then I learned a little bit about what's the spreadsheet program?
Excel,
yes. I learned a little bit about Excel. And I learned enough that I put together, about 2 weeks ago, I put together our household bills on an Excel spreadsheet, right? And I put it all together and I you know, put the numbers in and I got it to, you know, I did the sum function so it would add all the numbers up. And then I was like, oh, wait, I missed a bill. And I showed, I'm showing my wife and she's like, you did that? I'm like, yeah, that's what they taught me. And then I'm like, oh, I missed a bill. Hold on. And I go in between like column or row 4 and row 5 and create another row and put in a new bill and adds it into it automatically. And she's like, wow, how'd you get that to work? That's what this program does. They taught me how to do it.
Yep.
Isn't that cool? She goes, yeah, that's a little sum. So I got through those. But the one class they didn't have me do during that Microsoft class, the one part of that they didn't have me work with was PowerPoint. Never touched on PowerPoint.
Ah.
And okay, so I'm sitting here with this PowerPoint.
We're going to cycle back around this, and I wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Okay, so here we go.
I never touched on PowerPoint, so I've never worked with it, never built a presentation. Like I said, I've always thought of it as some kind of a magic thing. You know, when do you stop? How much do you do? This is also why I don't like art. And like, you know, like art of like drawing and painting and all of that. Painting has always baffled me because, again, when do you stop? When do you stop the, you know, at what point do you, you must feel it. You must feel the moment where this is where it is and you stop. I guess that's how it is only because that's how I feel when I do any acting.
Good and, Lord. Never get into audio engineering, my friend. Never get into audio engineering.
I think the difference would be, I'm not necessarily one of the things I like in acting is I like a little bit of rawness to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't like it to be exactly perfect. I like some of the raw and realistic stuff. Mm-hmm. I think I'd probably be the same way doing audio engineering is I would be much more about it being raw and real as opposed to being precise. And so I would probably infuriate everybody else with the fact that I would want more of that that natural and realistic sound as opposed to some of the precision that I think is necessary in most musical production. People would probably be listening. What would probably happen is I would probably mix a song and send it to you and be like, what the hell did you do? And I'm like, I like it though. It sounds good. Yeah, but there's this and there's this and there's this and there's this. And dude, what did you do? I'm like, but I like how it sounds. I know you like how it sounds, James, but that's not how it's supposed to be.
No, I'm talking more so about I'm talking more so about the inconsistencies that tend to happen. Like you, I understand up to a degree, but you want to have some semblance of control of that art form because that is an art form. And I have seen and heard people that do the raw thing masterfully. I know a lot of producers that really can make a career out of that feel. And that's great. But what I'm talking about is like you're getting things down to a general balance. You just about got it. But then the bassist hits this one note and it eats the vocal right in the wrong spot. And now you can't get it out of there. And now you're just like, ah, but then you start
have a solution.
Fixing that.
Have a solution.
What?
Have a solution.
What?
Shoot the bassist.
Shoot the bassist.
No.
I mean, then you don't
the
have
bassist
a bass
anyway. Seriously, who needs the bassist anyway?
But,
sorry, Jeff, I love you. anyway,
but like the thing is like you catch those little things, and then you'll catch them all over the place where you'll hear them, and it wasn't what you intended to have done, or you did a thing and fixed it and generated another problem somewhere else. So the philosophy behind of a mix is you're never fully finished with it. You just give up partway through the process and hope that it turns out okay. Right? That's the idea of audio engineering in general.
This is why. And apparently filmmaking is supposed to be the exact same way. If I ever do record music, I'm going to give you rough recordings of stuff and then like have you tell me what you want me to record and then send it to you and flatter you a bunch and say nice things about you and hope that you'll put it all together and make it work. That's how I intend it.
Oh, you're going to flatter
you know,
me
future,
into being your engineer. Oh, I get it.
Or I could threaten you with blackmail-y type stuff.
Okay.
Buy me a house, produce my music. You pick which one's easier.
Speaking of which,
nobody knows about.
Speaking of which, you should... have you been able to do any, just completely off on the side, have you been able to do any recording? Because I know you've been...
No, I'm just playing stuff
kind of toying around with that. Okay, just curious. Because I want to hear it when the opportunity arises. I want to hear what you come up with, man.
Of course.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, moving on to PowerPoint, because that's what this was about.
Back sitting here in front of the PowerPoint.
Okay.
And hey, many of these things may have been going through my mind the entire time. My mind was racing. Because I'm looking at this thing and it feels so alien and foreign to me. And I'm like, okay, so normally like PowerPoint things have like pictures on them, right? They get like pictures of stuff. So what can I get pictures of? Like, again, me hating PowerPoint stuff. What do I get a picture of? Do I get like the PowerPoint logo? That could be funny. Do again, like I do the meme thing like you're talking about. Do I get people sleeping on desks because they're so bored? Do I take a picture? I even thought of taking a picture of myself or having my wife take a picture of me sleeping on a desk just to like add how bored it makes me personally and how much I hate it.
Okay.
I was like, that would be funny. Or to have me have like one side that has a picture of me sleeping and then a picture of me making like a disgusted look or picking my nose or whatever, just something that just kind of showed me just totally disinterested, not wanting to be involved. I was like, this would be fun, but like I already wrote the one essay that was a little bit, you know, a little bit mouthy. And I've learned in the past that you get like, unless you know the teacher, and these are online courses, so I've talked to the teacher on the phone one time at the beginning of the course, and then the rest of the communication has been via email. And this teacher has like, you know, the whatever number of students that they're dealing with for this class. So there's no real personal connection with this teacher. Like, again, my English teacher back in high school, I would write things in a specific tone because he was my audience. And this is part of what I had to learn when I was doing chapters on PowerPoint presentation. Know your audience, right? Have an understanding of what your audience is going to be interested in, looking for. You know, that's a good way to be successful with your presentation. You have to know who your audience is. And
yeah,
Absolutely. I don't know this audience that well. I don't know this lady that well. She said it was a, she said the paper was a good paper, but like, do I know if she was laughing while reading it and getting the humor that I was providing, understanding, yeah, fully understanding my voice in the writing, or whether she just thought I was just, you know, I'm just some snarky guy. And I, you know, there's a difference between being funny and kind of sarcastic and being snarky. They're
right,
similar,
right?
But there's just like a slight subtle difference, and subtle enough that like funny, sarcastic, you like that guy. Snarky is an asshole. And so right, I'm like, am I the snarky asshole to her, or am I the funny, sarcastic guy? I don't know.
So well, what sucks is the I'm fact sure you don't have like this, any one-on-one or yeah, in-person correspondence. So you can't read the room. You can't read the teacher. Yeah, there's no way to exactly do that. Right.
The only thing that I know that her and I have in common really is a general love for football. She's a fan of the Denver Broncos. I'm of course a 49er fan. If again, if people didn't know that, why are you listening to us? But anyway, so when we had our first phone conversation, there was a little bit of football talk, but I was like, I don't want to do something necessarily on football. What am I going to show her that, you know, Denver lost the Super Bowl to the 49ers? I could rub that in her face, but I didn't want to go there. And, you know, I also didn't want to, again, five slides to talk about football. I really don't think I can talk about football in five slides, unless I'm going to finally confirm to everybody the thing that they should already know, that Tom Brady is the best quarterback to ever play football. And if you are questioning that, just look at the jewelry on his hands, people, please.
Boy, there are a lot of people that are real bitter about that assessment.
Be as bitter as you want to be. Dude is sitting on a pile of money, first ballot Hall of Famer, and will go down as the best quarterback of all time, period. I don't care about passing records. I don't care about touchdown records. All I'm seeing is that dude did the thing that you play the game to do, which is win the Super Bowl. And he did it. He's been to the Super Bowl half the years that he's been in the league. He's played in the Super Bowl. That damn, no other quarterback has come close to that kind of a feat. So no, I'm sorry. And then dude leaves the team where everybody's, oh, it's the system, oh, it's the coach. He leaves that team, goes to another team, and goes directly to the Super Bowl and wins it again.
That proves to me more than anything that it was the quarterback and not either the team or the coach that did that shit. That
to me, that
to a degree,
way,
you know what I mean?
To me, what there is something definitely about him personally that helps to motivate a team and gets the team over that hump.
Yeah, it's something. So, doing something, like, there is something about him that does that shit. Like, you're absolutely right. You can't deny that. As jealous as you may be of the fact that it's happening, the fact that you don't want him to be like that, cool. But recognize the fact that it happened. It is a fact this point.
Maybe Harvey Keitel likes him better than he ever liked Dan Marino. That's all I can think of. But anyway, please tell me you got that joke.
No. No.
Really? You did it for Namath.
I'm sorry.
Anybody who gets that joke,
I'm
anybody
lost.
Who gets that joke, leave a comment. I'll tell Mike about it later.
Okay.
And then he's going to feel dumb.
I probably will.
Hold on, I'm writing it down so I don't forget. Anyway, because sometimes, by the way, we say these things that I'm going to tell Mike about something later, and I totally forget by the time we're done with the podcast. It's like, what the hell was I going to tell you about? I don't remember. Well, listen back and ask me about it later. Okay. And he never asks me about it later because it's probably not that important. But anyway, so again, back to where I'm at. And
oh, wait a
just
minute.
How this conversation.
God damn it.
Huh?
It just hit me.
It just hit you?
It just hit me what movie it was. Yeah, I had to think about it for a minute. I'm sitting here going, the first Dan Marino movie I thought was Ace Ventura. And then I was like, it can't be Ace Ventura. And then I had to rack my brain over which one it was. And then I just realized what it was.
So basically it hit you like a pineapple in the asshole.
Yes.
Okay, good, good.
Exactly, good. Exactly.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
It
no.
Should.
Yes.
You can understand my disappointment then.
Yes.
You can understand my disappointment.
I can entirely. I can entirely.
Shaking my head at you. Anyway, and this is funny how this conversation keeps diverging away from it, because this is what I was doing. mentally. I was trying whatever I could to not do this PowerPoint presentation, to not get, because it's this new territory for me. This is one of those foreign things that, like, I fell right within that time generation. I fell right within that family setup, because again, especially having having my father being a little bit older than most of our peers' fathers at the time. My mother was around the same age that all of our peers would have had the same age parents. You know what I mean? My mother would have been close in age to your parents. But my father, I have brothers that are 10 and 7 years older than me. So he had a family, start his family back in the 1970s. So having an older father, he worked on computers when he was in high school, but he worked on literally like the type where you would have to program the computers on punch cards and feed the punch cards into the computer as programming. That's the type of computers he was working on. He was working on old school, like,
damn, way back.
Computers would take up like a building and shit. So yeah. He tried to get into that. And then, you know, when he started working, he just kind of got away from it. But, you know, no computers growing up in the house because parents saw no need for it, no connection to it. So this is, again, that's foreign. I'm feeling weird. And I'm like, okay, part of the instructions are talk about what you know about. Do something about what you know about. And I went back to some of the things I was thinking about for the original essay, the first essay in the class. And I'm like, I've done tons of research on a bunch of different things for the podcast. I'm going to use a topic from the podcast. Well, what topic, if I abridge it down, can I tell with 5 slides? And part of it is you make the 5 slides. This was the assignment. You made the 5 slides, and then you had to send basically what you would say for each slide. You know, type out what you would say for each slide as your presentation.
Right.
So you have your presentation notes and then your slides. So I'm like, what can I fit into five slides if I abridge the tale really small? If I just tell like the bullet points of the tale. And so I chose one of our previous podcast topics. Would you like to venture a guess which one that I could abridge to 5 slides and that I wanted to tell?
Yeah. I think I might have a guess.
What is your guess?
The Mad Story and drunk driving in the Fair Oaks area.
Oh, that would have been a good one. No, that's not the one I thought.
Okay.
Man. I thought of one that actually I mentioned in my essay.
Oh, okay.
I thought to myself, self, what is one of your favorite stories to relate?
Okay.
What is it that you like to tell people about? And one of the things I like to tell people about is I like telling people interesting information about things that they typically claim to not like. And what is one of those things that people claim to not like all the time, treat like garbage?
And oh, man.
Is actually really good. And it's really American.
Is it? I think I know now what you're talking about. You gave me all the clues because I believe this is something that you converted me on, if I am not mistaken, with our podcast. I believe that would be on the history of spam.
Yes, it would be.
That's wonderful. How,
so my presentation was
how spam
helped win World War II.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
It was because I was like, you know what? I can abridge this down small enough. Mm-hmm. And so first slide is that, you know, how spam helped win World War II and picture of spam, mm-hmm. You know, the can of spam.
Yep.
Second slide is, and you know, the notes for that, I don't have the notes with me right now because I already sent it away to the teacher and it's on my other computer, but because I have two. Oh my God, I have two laptop computers.
What kind of a monster are you, sir?
What is this world coming to that the computer killer has two computers now?
Yeah. And they both function?
Well, actually, they both function pretty well. Hell, I learned on the second computer how to access the Microsoft thingy online, because that's where my account is through my school, to be able to use all of the Microsoft programs, you know, all, you know, Word and Excel and all that. I've learned how to access that online and save the stuff online, plus how to download it to my laptop and convert it to PDFs and email it to people, attach it in emails. I've learned all this stuff. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
What's happening to the world? Dogs and cats living together. Anyway, so first one is, you know, how spam helped win World War II. And it goes right into the, you know, basic explanation of of spam helping. Then second slide, Nazi Germany invades Russia. And so okay. I got a picture of like German tanks and a picture of like the, with two different colors, like one for the Germans, one for the Russians, and the paths that they took for invasion and defense and all of that.
Right.
Boom. Third slide. And I loved this slide because like I had a picture spam, a nice huge picture spam on the first one, right? Right. I had these two other pictures on the second one. You got the Germans, you got the kind of the Russians thing, but that gives you the idea of what was going on. So the second slide literally was just a single slide that said the people were starving. No pictures, no nothing. Just the people were starving. Because I was like, what? I don't want to put a picture of starving people up there. That's just wrong. But like, I thought that if I have a picture on the first one, picture on the second one, I know I'm going to put a picture on the fourth one and the fifth one. So on the third one, right in the middle.
Oh my God, dude. You okay? You actually kind of missed an opportunity, because it'd be hilarious if you just said on the top of it, the people were starving, and then had a big block in the middle that just said slide removed for graphic content. And then you moved on to the next slide.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
I was just thinking aesthetically, it would look good to have nothing there. Cause like, again, who wants to see people starving?
Right.
And depending on the crowd, I would say, yeah, I wanted to find a picture for people starving, but honestly, do we want to see that? So it's just the people are starving. You see that up there. That should tell you what you need to know. You don't need to see starving people.
Right.
And then the next slide was, I forget what I said on it, but it was about Hormel had created a new food product. And I was going into the description at that point, and going to the description of how spam was created, what it came from, the fact that it was something that could be made to be shelf stable and could be made cheaply, and was made in a assembly line type way, so it could be made quickly and large amounts made, and how it became a staple food for the United States Army at the start of World War II, because of all those factors. It could be made very quickly, made very cheaply. In the can setting, it was shelf stable for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And very easily transportable. All the reasons why it was a perfect food to be able to send all over the world to make sure that people were getting an appropriate protein. And it's pre-cooked. So right. All you got to do is crack it in the can and eat it if you want to.
Yeah.
Everything to make it just a wonder food.
Yeah.
Especially at that time when trying to keep food and keep it fresh and keep it good was very difficult to do. And if you're going to be in countries where they don't have, I mean, electricity was around during World War II, of course, but they were going into areas where if a city's bombed out, it ain't got no electricity. You ain't got nowhere to store any food. You know what I'm saying? And so this gives you a protein supply. Protein supplies are hard to come by if you don't have a way to store it. You know, that's why ancient peoples would salt the hell out of their proteins so that they could keep them and preserve them for long periods of time. Because otherwise you need to have a fresh protein supply to kill and eat pretty immediately, because you just can't store it. Things like grain, you can store grain for a long time. If you, you know, do certain things with certain fruits and vegetables, you can store them for a long period of time. But they're also plentiful and usually around. But protein supplies, you need to keep the animal alive. And you need to then be able to kill it and eat it within a relatively short period of time. It's very hard to do in a war torn area. And again, once you've killed it, you're on a clock. You either have to figure out a way to preserve it, which again, hard to do in a war torn area, or in like the middle of the jungle. You don't have a lot of ways to preserve things that way, or you need to eat it now. And for those who may be listening who say, well, there are other protein sources other than animal protein, none of them are really good enough for human consumption, which is why anybody that does have a diet that does not have animal protein in it has to take supplements for certain things like, I don't know, iron, B12, because there are no other real good supplies of that in any kind of vegetarian or vegan food sources. You need to have animal protein for those things, or you need to take supplements. Guess what? One, they really didn't have the availability of supplements back in World War II.
Right.
And two, even if they did, what do you think is easier to find in World War II? A chicken? In the war-torn areas of World War II, a chicken or some B12? I'm thinking the chicken. Eat the chicken. Sorry. It's what you got to do. Right. Anyway, having Spam be the way it was is perfect food for that type of purpose. So that slide was going to be about that, but I loved this slide because I went and got a picture of spices, just like little white bowls with a bunch of different spices in them. And then I got the Hormel logo, and then I got a picture of some ham. It's like slices of ham. Right. And so spices, Hormel logo, slices of ham. I'm so proud of that one. That one's just like, it's spiced ham.
Yeah.
And then the final slide was the U.S. knowing what was going on in Russia and the fact that the people were starving in Stalingrad. The Russian army was starving. Germans had destroyed the countryside, cut off most of the supply chains. They started sending, through various different groups, they started sending supplies of Spam to Russia. And this is just focusing on the Russian part of it. I didn't even talk about what happened in the Pacific because that would have taken too many more slides. They started sending the stuff to Russia, and you know, Russia was able to feed their army and feed the people in Stalingrad and push back the German invasion, yada, yada, yada. The final one is an American flag, and then the picture of the dude standing on the side of the building with the Russian flag after the Battle of Stalingrad,
right,
after the siege of Stalingrad. And then they're kind of right next to each other. And then I even put the quote from Nikita Khrushchev about Spam. If they didn't have Spam, they wouldn't have been able to feed their army. I had that quote underneath it. I did the quote in italics too to make it look all special and fancy. That was my PowerPoint presentation.
That's fantastic.
Damn, this podcast has actually been helpful for more than just me being able to talk about shit and get you know, some therapy by talking about things.
Yeah.
I was able to take something I learned from this and teach somebody something else about, of course, again, the most patriotic of meats.
Yes. Spam. Yes. That's fantastic.
If you're not eating Spam, you need to go eat it right now.
Yeah. You know what? Every time, and I know we've had this conversation more than once, every time you talk about Spam, it makes me want to go get Spam and be like, I think I could have some Spam tonight. Like every time we have this conversation. So we're going
to. I want to tell you about something.
What?
There's a Spam that you can get. For those of you who are in a situation maybe similar to what my situation is right now, where I am trying to eat a lower calorie, more healthy diet. Mm-hmm. Because I'm too fat and it's killing my body. Spam is, you know, got a fairly high fat content, got a really, really high sodium content.
Yes.
There are light versions of Spam. There are sodium free versions of Spam. There are even bacon versions of Spam where the Spam tastes more like bacon. It was really good.
Is it called Spacon?
It's called Bacon Spam.
Oh,
literally Bacon Spam.
Okay.
But it's Spam, but tastes like bacon, which is the best of two worlds, I think.
Fantastic.
It's really good.
Yeah.
There is turkey Spam.
They have turkey Spam?
They have turkey Spam.
Turkey Spam. Now, I have had regular Spam, and I'm cool with regular Spam, but it tastes a little too salty to me, personal taste. Yeah, however, salty. The low-sodium Spam, I really dig on. Most low-sodium alternatives to food, I tend to like a lot more than the regular. Like, a lot of sugar-removed or sodium-removed alternatives, I tend to kind of gravitate towards. I just like the flavor.
That's good that you've identified that for yourself. Yeah. There's a few that I'm good with, but yeah, I will agree that regular Spam can be a little salty sometimes. Part of that is some of the preservation of the meat. Part of that is some of the spices being used. But there is a turkey Spam version that is it's made by Hormel. You won't find it as one of the because sometimes you can find like a store brand of Spam, and most of them are all right. They're still not the original thing, but if you know you do what you can in a pinch, money wise.
Yeah,
but the turkey Spam, I on my again on my kind of change in lifestyle and trying to eat healthier, I found this turkey Spam and found that it was lower in calories, a little bit healthier because it was turkey instead of pork.
Right.
And so I figured, you know what? I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to give this a try, see what it's like, see if I can supplement it with my breakfast, take out some of the eggs that I was eating for breakfast every morning.
Yeah.
The scrambled eggs I was eating, and throw in some Spam and see if I can add a little more flavor, a little bit more, you know, cause like the scrambled eggs and waffle that I eat every morning. And I literally do eat a half protein, half oat waffle with scrambled eggs on top every morning.
Nice.
I typically put a decent amount of hot sauce on it because hot sauce doesn't have any calories, so it adds a little bit of extra flavor. And it's all high protein stuff, you know, low carb. Was a little high in the calories, but I changed that recently too. Egg whites instead of real eggs. Use a lot more of the hot sauce now, but at least it works. But anyway, I was like, let's supplement a little bit. Let's try some. I want to get a meat that I can try. None of the other meats were working. Found this turkey Spam. Actually, I think my wife found it. And went and got it from the store. Let me tell you something, sir. I know you like to eat a little bit healthier. And as you've just said, the high sodium quality of Spam, you prefer the lighter sodium. And I know that both you and your wife, you try to incorporate a little more healthier things into your diet. And you even go to certain lengths of healthier that I'm like, nope, that's a bridge too far for me.
Understood.
But then again, my giant plates of vegetables, I think were maybe a bridge too far for you with all the vegetables that I had.
I would be completely honest. I wouldn't know. I honestly, if that's because I'm lazy, I really like the kind of stuff you were showing me. Like, that's good shit, dude.
Hold on. Let's just make sure everybody's clear on this. I'm lazy on manual labor. Mike's lazy when it comes to cooking food. And I can attest to that because, again, dude was without hot dog buns once and he put a hot dog in a tortilla. Okay.
Hey, you're not going. Yeah, now, hold on one second, man. That was just utilitarian at the time. It was something I got used to. Okay.
Yeah,
don't meet me with dead silence, you jackass.
Here's the thing. Again, we did live in the same apartment for a while. I can guarantee that the entire time we lived in that apartment, I cannot remember a single time Mike actually cooked food.
No, I didn't. I was always. I honestly, like, taking the time and dirtying dishes and doing all that kind of stuff was not really something like of no. If it's something that could come in a wrapper or something that I could just put on a paper plate if necessary, I'm fine with that. Here's the thing, James. I am not against cooking, but I hate making a bunch of dishes dirty because then that means I have to do dishes. Who likes doing dishes? Do you like doing dishes?
Yeah.
You like doing dishes.
That's how I passed home ec in seventh grade. I didn't do any of the cooking.
You freak of nature. You like doing dishes?
Yeah, I do, actually. Man. For the longest time, I was the only one allowed in the house to do dishes because I don't like the way other people clean dishes. Eventually, I was okay with my wife doing it because she gets them as clean as I do. But I don't trust.
See,
other
I can understand. Okay, see, I can understand that you have a particular system that you like to like. You of have course, a system also, that you've developed, and you know what the results are. So you are someone that prefers to do that. Like, that sounds less like I like doing that and more like I don't trust anyone else to do it.
Well, not there's part of it is to don't trust anyone else. But like, seriously, let's say I was staying as a guest in your house for some reason, I was there for like, you know, a month or something staying because of whatever reason. Right.
Okay.
I would offer to do dishes every night after food was done and I would have no problem doing it.
I've no got problem whatsoever. Okay. I have a question
and I would
for
even
you.
Ask you. I would even ask you, like, how do you, as I'm getting ready to clean certain things, like this pot, is there a specific way you want me to clean it? Is there a specific thing you don't want me to use on it? And it wouldn't be me trying to ask you that in the way of, like, I want you to do it instead of me because it may be a specific process.
No.
Just tell me exactly how you want it done, and I will do it that way so I don't scratch your stuff, I don't mess up your stuff. But I actually like doing dishes.
Okay, I think I kind of understand what's going down with this because there's a certain level of catharsis that comes down to certain things. I think you find catharsis in doing dishes.
Seriously, after dinner, whether I've cooked or whether my wife's cooked, if she's doing something after dinner, then I'll just go and start washing the dishes. It's usually just whoever gets up and gets to the sink first. We'll start washing the dishes immediately. And while I'm cooking, I'm washing the stuff that I've used. So like if I'm making when I'm making breakfast in the morning, I make pancakes for my son and I make my waffles for myself. Once I'm done with the bowl, the pancake mix is mixed in because he has a separate mix than me.
Right.
Once again, the protein and the oats. His is just regular pancake mix. Once I'm done with his pancake mix bowl, like I've done the pancakes out on the griddle and started making them, it goes right in the sink and I wash it and clean it and it's right in the thing. When I'm done with breakfast, when I sit down to eat my breakfast in the morning, every morning, the sinks are cleared and all the dishes that I use to make my breakfast are already in the dish drainer or in the dishwasher already.
You know, okay, so there definitely is a level of enjoyment you find in it.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, you run with that until you croak, because that is a very rare thing. And I'm quite sure that anybody that you live with is more than happy at the fact that you enjoy doing dishes as much as you do. Because I haven't found a single other person that I know of that enjoys doing dishes. There's nobody else that I know of that. I mean, it's not like a conversation you really have with people, because it almost seems like a universally accepted thing that most people don't like doing fucking dishes. But that's rare, and I think it's commendable to find someone who enjoys it.
It used to be like like when we'd have family get-togethers like Thanksgiving or Christmas, or when we invited family over pre-COVID and when we liked people. We'd have family over for stuff, and like, you know, it's a birthday party for the kids or something.
Yeah.
Second, like the cake's done and plates are being put in the sink for the cake.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, kids have opened their presents and done their thing. I'm in the kitchen cleaning the stuff. And yeah, I get looks from family members like, why is, because there's the whole gender role thing of why is the man in there doing the dishes?
Why isn't
the woman in there doing the dishes? Part of that, I'll admit, at that time it was like, huh, I want to show y'all that I'm the type of man that goes in and does the dishes and doesn't make my wife do it, because my wife isn't my slave to go in and do the dishes. That was, right. I'll admit, back then it was a part of it. But like, it ended up becoming something like, I just, when the dishes are there, I just like getting in there, getting them cleaned up, getting them done. I like to make, I know that they're clean at that point. I don't have a sink full of dishes bothering me and worrying me. I'm the first person that does any cooking in the kitchen every morning, kind of. And so I like to make sure that I have a fresh palate to work with every morning. And then I also like to make it if my wife's cooking dinner on a night, and she does the same thing for me, depending on who's cooking dinner. We both try to make sure that through our actions throughout the day that we're, you know, cleaning through dishes and getting through stuff so that whoever goes in to cook dinner, they don't have to deal with a big pile of dishes in the sink and on the counter and whatnot. Most of it's already done. If there is some stuff left, it's because there's not been enough to do a sink full of dishes or whatnot. Anything that goes in the dishwasher is rinsed and put in the dishwasher almost immediately. We don't wait on any of that. If you have lunch and, you know, you have a plate for lunch or something, when you're done with lunch, you go in, you rinse it off, you put it in the dishwasher immediately. It's just, we just figure the cycle is better just to keep it moving regularly. And it's not her job or it's not my job. It's just whoever happens to be there at that moment and there's stuff that needs to be done, we just do it. We don't worry about it. We don't keep score about it. We just, you know, get the job done because it needs to get done. Like tonight, I know that after dinner tonight, I have some things that I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Things that I'm going to have to be doing. So very likely it's very possible that my wife will end up being one to do the dishes for after dinner tonight. Of course, I'm also the one cooking dinner tonight too. So that sometimes happens. The person who cooks doesn't do the dishes. The person who didn't cook will sometimes do them. So whatever I don't do through the process of making dinner, whatever's completely left over afterwards,
right,
she may be the one to do it. Then again, I may still do it. There's no set rule on it. We just kind of, you know, do what we can. But yes, I like doing dishes. The original point I was going for was saying that, pointing out the fact that I'm lazy with yard work, but I'll spend as much time as necessary cooking something. Literally, I'll spend hours and hours cooking something. First time I ever did a smoked brisket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even sleep that night because I was up every 2 hours making sure that that there was a proper amount of. It was also the dead of winter, so it was really cold outside.
Oh yeah, you got to watch that.
So every 2 hours, I was up adding stuff in there to keep the temperature at the right spot and make sure I'm changing out chips and whatnot for the smoking process. So I did not sleep at all that night. It was very bad that it was Christmas Day the next day because I was exhausted to that Christmas Day. But you know what? It's a pretty damn good brisket.
I was going to say, it probably was fucking amazing too. Yeah, I'm sure.
And then a week later at New Year's, I turned the leftover brisket into a chili. Oh, that was good.
Ooh, okay. Wow. Yeah, I'm impressed. That's good.
But anyway, yeah, so I was just highlighting the difference of the fact that you prefer the convenience and you may be a little more lazy when it comes to the cooking process and the dishes being a big part of it because you don't want to have to wash the dishes.
Yeah.
Me, it's worth the washing of as many dishes as I need to wash to get the food to be the way I want it. I love food that much. Now,
I can understand
that. That also is illustrated in the fact that if you were to put me and Mike standing next to each other, we'd look like two friends standing next to each other. If you were to put me in front of Mike, Mike would disappear because I am still, to this day, so fat.
Aww.
I'm working on it, but at this point, I have no problem freely admitting that I could completely obscure Mike. This isn't like an eclipse thing where like the moon passes in front of the sun and you can still see the sun around the edges, right? No, Mike would be gone. If I walk in front of him, he's just gone. It's like he disappeared.
So you're talking like a lunar eclipse?
No, even more.
Oh, okay.
You would cease to exist, actually.
Oh, wow.
Probably get sucked in by the gravity of my stomach.
Good Lord.
But anyway.
Engulfed.
This is why I never get too close to you, sir. I don't want that to happen.
Well, I appreciate the consideration.
But, you know, that probably does show in the fact that, yeah, I've eaten a lot of food. And now, I also want you to think about this.
What?
Okay? Now, I will admit I've only had a few samples of your food, and they have been good samples of food, and that's high praise coming from me.
Thank you.
Because normally I will tell people if their food is awful.
Good. Thank you. But, I appreciate that.
I know that over the years, it's been a while since I've cooked for you, but over the years you've had some pretty high praise for the food that myself and my wife have cooked. And so when you're used to eating food like that, now that for you, those have been some certain events that you've come over and, you know, had the different things, the chicken cordon bleu, the various barbecue things that we've done. Mm-hmm. Those for you are specific events and those happen. That's like daily for me. I eat that food on a daily basis, or mm-hmm. I did. So like, I'm willing to take as much time as it's necessary to get that amazing food to eat it on a daily basis. And willing to take as much time as necessary to clean up after that food.
Because you realize that the food, the ultimate goal is the food of that quality.
It's worth it. It's kind of like saying that the drug addict will do anything that they possibly can to get their drug, to get their next fix.
Right.
Well, food was my fix, so I would do anything possible. There is no laziness involved. If it takes me an hour standing in front of a stove to get literally 5 ounces of something to eat, I will do it to make sure it's done right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And anybody that takes shortcuts, I have people that I know that will take a shortcut on it and be like, why do you do that? Does it taste as good as the original version? No, but I don't feel like taking the time for that, so I'll just do this. Take the time. It's worth it. It's food. So, yeah, just the contrast in people. Anyway, we went off on a tangent. I'm hungry now, which is a bad thing because I've been fighting this, although it's not too long till dinner. So, yay for that. Bacon, interestingly enough, for dinner. Well, at least it's part of dinner.
Nice.
So that's good. Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
Got a question for you.
What's up?
Where are people listening to us talk about food?
Well, you could very well be listening to us on our website, thezenniochronicles.com, or type zencron.com, X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. If you don't want to type that entire website title, you can type that. Speaking of Zencron, you can also find us.
By the way. Who the hell came up with such a long damn website title? That's some stupid person. Because I'm just gonna say that that's like why if you want people to visit the website, you make it small. Whoever suggested the Zencron thing, smart guy. Whoever came up with the Zennio Chronicles as the whole website, I mean it's a cool name for the podcast, but that is the entire website. Literally nobody wants to type that shit. Stupid idiot.
You know what? We need to fire that guy.
Wait a minute. I came up with that one, didn't I?
Shit. I believe you may have. This creates a problem.
God damn it. See, this is why I don't know about computers.
Okay.
Sorry, proceed.
Shorthand is the way to go. Zencron.com. Go there. Also, speaking of Zencron, go find us at Zencron on Facebook and at Zencron on Twitter. And speaking of which, you can also check out our podcast on various different websites, podcast feeds, wherever you get, you know, most of the places that you get your podcast, you know, Apple and Google and TuneIn and Spotify and all that stuff. But honestly, hopefully you guys are listening to this on our YouTube page, which we do have every single podcast we've ever done on our YouTube page. So for right now, because we're trying to get enough subs to get up to that next level, go find the Xennial Chronicles on YouTube. If you're not listening to us on YouTube right now, go search for the Xennial Chronicles and subscribe to our YouTube page right freaking now. Do it. While you're listening to this, if you're listening to this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Also, hit the bell icon so that the next podcast, or if we don't have a podcast, we'll put out a video explaining why we're not having a podcast. And those can be entertaining every once in a while.
Hey!
Hey, what?
You stole my bell!
Did I steal your bell?
You told them to click the bell icon. The bell is my thing!
Oh my goodness. Damn it.
This is what happens when you come up with a super long ass name for the freaking website, and you have to point out that you're an idiot for doing it. Mike forgets the entire script.
Oh man! Now I feel like I ruined the whole damn thing.
You're thinking about bacon, aren't you?
I am thinking about bacon and spam. Exactly.
I had
damn it
together in a big sandwich.
Oh, bacon spam while you're sandwich.
While you're there on YouTube, clicking that bell. You might want to check out the other pages that Mike has. One of which, he gives information about music history stuff, music recording stuff, music stuff in general, because he likes music.
Yeah.
And that would be Ruling Note Music, aptly named. The other one is where he plays video games with his wife. This is the other page that he has, where he also messes up everything, just like he did a moment ago. And that page would be Chronozode Games.
Yes.
And again, this is him. This is him and his wife playing video games, talking about what they're doing while playing them, doing funny voices, and also attempting to play the games in chronological order of the story, not of when the games actually were released.
Yes.
If you're checking those out, subscribe to those two, please. Click the bells on both of those so that you get the notifications. Can't believe he stole that
from me. I'm so sorry. I was just running.
Like one of my favorite parts.
I know. I'm sorry, man. We'll make sure on the next episode you get your bell, and for every episode on what?
You know what, though? I'm kind of glad because, like, recently I've been, like, coming up with other funny phrases instead of the click the bell first, just to be humorous. I had none today.
Oh, okay.
So in some ways, it saved me. See, this is the truthful thing. Remember when I was talking about the truthful thing earlier?
Yeah.
Anyway. Check those out. Subscribe to those. Click the bells on those. Subscribe to this. Click the bell on this. And hopefully you'll be able to look back at some of the other things that we talked about in this podcast today. The, you know, spam, the history of Marvel movies and how they all interconnect, how all the Star Wars movies interconnect. Because guess what? Those have all been podcasts that we've done, and you will find them all on our YouTube page. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.